This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Russ Niles reporting for AvWeb. We're with Jan Brill. He is the managing editor of Pilot und Flugzeug, and I won't be saying that anymore during the interview. And he has written quite a scathing editorial about the EASA's new pilot qualification rule. It's called the FCL. And Jan, why don't you tell us what the major concerns are about this sort of homogenization of pilot rules in Europe?
Thank you very much, Ross, and your German sounds really good. I really appreciate that. So what this whole thing is about, what everybody is upset about in Europe right now, is pretty much, when I look back to when I started in general aviation and when I was moving around with different jobs in different areas of the world, Australia, Canada, the U.S., it was always fairly easy to validate your license in a foreign country. So me starting out with my training in Europe, it was pretty simple for me to get a Canadian license and to do general aviation flying in Canada. It was simple for me to get a U.S. validation under Part 6175 and keep flying and undergo training in the U.S. And that has been true the other way around in a certain way, at least for some time. Now, what EASA has done with the new pilot regulations that are in effect as of April 8th, this year, is they have pretty much ended the ability for a foreign pilot to come in and get his license validated in Europe. So if you, as I have done, if you're working, for example, for a large international company and are being transferred to a European subsidiary and you want to keep up with your GA flying, there's not a lot you can do because you would have to undergo, if you wanted to validate a PPLIR, you would have to do at least 9 written exams. You would have to undergo mandatory training in a flight school aircraft. You couldn't use your own aircraft if you decided to bring it along. And you would have to, as soon as you're a resident of Europe, you would have to get a full European license, undergoing the full European training, because a validation is only issued for a period of 1 year, and you cannot repeat it, and you cannot extend it. So it's 1 year validation, and that's it.
Okay, well, it sounds like a huge pain and a big inconvenience, but it also sounds fairly costly. What would be the cost of me getting my PPLIR in Europe if I came over there?
If you wanted to get PPLIR privileges in Europe, the minimum, depending on an assessment that is done by a flight school and the authority, the minimum flight training that you would have to undergo is probably between 15 and 20 hours. And that is considering that you're very proficient, that you're absolutely current, that you have familiarized yourself with international GA flying and European rules and regulations. So that's really when there's nothing that really has to be ironed out. So 15 hours is probably a fair estimate. And the total cost, including the fees for security check, including the fees for the 9 written exams, including fees for the flight school, for registering yourself with the flight school, registering yourself with the appropriate government agency, getting all the paperwork together, would be about 7,000 euros, so roughly about 10 grand.
Why is EASA doing this? Most of the GA nations have bilateral agreements with the other GA nation. Why is EASA isolating itself this way?
That's a very good question, and I guess the answer must really be multifaceted, because there are several aspects to this. The first one is, it used to be that about 10-12% of the European general aviation fleet were operated under foreign registers. So the U.S. register was certainly the most popular one. There are many N-registered aircraft here in Europe. We even have N-registered aircraft in our own company. Larger aircraft have been registered on the Isle of Man and in the Bermudas. And this was certainly a pain in the neck for the authorities, because these aircraft have an impeccable safety record, and they were flying safely under European airspace regulations in European airspace operated by European operators. So there was a certain political momentum to close this loophole, if you want to call it that. That's one reason. Another reason is that European students, flight students, and experienced pilots have gone out mostly to the U.S., but also to Canada and Australia, and have undergone training there. And what has happened now is pretty much an import tariff on a pilot certificate. So if you want to get your certificate that you've earned in Canada and in the U.S. back into the European licensing system, you have to come up with those 5,000, 7,000, 10,000 euros and cope with all those bureaucratic burdens to get your license either validated or converted.
Okay, well, what do you think the effect will be?
Well, the effect will be that for anyone who is moving to any of the European countries, and it's not just the EU, it's Switzerland and Norway as well, anyone who moves to Europe is practically out of an option to keep up with his general aviation flying. So there's no way somebody who's being transferred by a large international company, there's no way he can do 9 exams, 250 study hours, and basically a full practical set of training flights just to fly a 172 around on the weekend. I think maybe some people are hoping that that there are not as many people going to North America to obtain licenses and ratings. I'm not sure if this is going to happen, but the immediate effect is going to be that to anyone flying around here with U.S. licenses, there is, dependent on the country, a grace period of a year or two, but after that, they're either grounded or they have to do the full thing. They have to get the full European license with ATP-level written exams, practical training, check rights, and they can't even do it in their own airplane.
ATP-level exams?
Yeah, I've done the written exams in the U.S. and in Europe as well, so I think I'm a little bit in a position to compare the levels of questions, and you can certainly compare a European IR to a U.S. ATP in quantity and just in the level of questions. So if you learn about the makings of the inner ear, you learn about, DME pulse pair timing, and all that, and that's all part of the written exam. So you ought to get much deeper into the whole thing, especially in radio navigation, human performance. You ought to get much deeper into the whole thing that you'd have to if you just got a U.S. instrument rating.
There seems to be some faint hope that there's a political solution to this, that EASA may relax some of these regulations. Is that a possibility?
There's some possibilities that some of these issues are going to be alleviated. The simplest would obviously be to reinstate a bilateral agreement. For example, my home country, Germany, had a bilateral agreement with the U.S. that licenses in both ways were validated on a fairly simple basis. I mean, still, getting a license validation in Germany would be more bureaucratic than getting a license validation from the FAA, but after all, it was at least possible. Now, there is talk, and unfortunately, as far as I know, it's really only talk, about the EASA getting a bilateral agreement with the FAA to get some kind of understanding that pilot certificates are good in Europe and in North America as well. Is this going to happen? I don't know. Another possibility is there's some regulations that are currently discussed being discussed to simplify the road to the European instrument rating. That's something that foreign pilots could take advantage of as well, could use as well. But that's just a proposal. It's within the bureaucracy of EASA and EU Commission, and we really don't know what the time frame and the progress on this is going to be.
We will be following it with some considerable interest from here on in, and we thank you for your time today, Jan. Russ Niles reporting for AvWeb. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine. For more on aviation safety, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com.